Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome to the Mill Creek View podcast, focusing on our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, very special guest, Professor Michael Rechtenwald. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Professor Michael Rechtenwald. Dr. Michael Rechtenwald is the author of 12 books, including The Great Reset and The Struggle for Liberty, Unraveling the Global Agenda, 2023, Thought Criminal, 2020, Beyond Woke, 2020, Google Archipelago, The Digital Gulag and the Simulation of Freedom, September 2019. Michael is a distinguished fellow at Hillsdale College. He was a professor of liberal studies and global liberal studies at NYU from 2008 to 2019. He also taught at Duke, North Carolina Central University, Carnegie Mellon University, and Case Western Reserve University. His scholarly and academic essays have appeared in the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics, Endeavor, the British Journal for the History of Science, College Composition and Communication, International Philosophical Quarterly, and the Cambridge University Press anthology, George Eliot in Context, among many others. He holds a PhD in Literary and Cultural Studies from Carnegie Mellon University and Master's in English Literature from Case Western Reserve University and a BA in English Literature from the University of Pittsburgh. I'm so out of my league, y'all. God help me. Michael's writings for general audiences has appeared on the Mises Institute Wire, the Epoch Times, RT.com, Campus Reform, the New English Review, the International Business Times, the American Conservative, Quillette, the Washington Post, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, CLG News, LotusEaters.com, Chronicles, and I could go on. You've seen him on Tucker Carlson Tonight, Fox and Friends, Varney and Company, The Ingram Angle, Unfiltered with Dan Bongino, The Glenn Beck Show, and now Mill Creek View Podcast. He's arrived. A former Marxist professor, Rechtenwald is a champion of liberty and opposes all forms of totalitarianism and political authoritarianism, including socialism, communism, social justice, fascism, political correctness, and woke ideology. Hello, Professor. How are you today?
I'm great, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thank you for asking. I hope I did you justice there. You got a long resume, sir.
Oh, thanks so much. No, that was very nice of you to run all that down.
Glad. I'm so glad it was okay. So 40 minutes goes by way too fast for a guest like you that pretty much can change our way of thinking and blow our minds. So let's get into it. I have a liberal arts degree, useless, but I can communicate most of the time. You're a retired liberal arts professor from NYU, New York University, and the foil of AOC lunacy. How'd you avoid the indoctrination?
Well, quite frankly, I didn't. I was, went through, 10 years of graduate school. And in the process, I was deeply indoctrinated into leftism, Marxism, postmodern theory, and all the isms that you can imagine. So it was a deep indoctrination process. But I managed to escape it. That's the key. I was able to basically deprogram myself and arrive out of it and to start to see, basically I was in the matrix and now I'm not. And that was really a long process, but it happened somewhat suddenly at first. And then I basically re-educated myself after I was basically abruptly disabused of the ideas that I had.
That's amazing. Some of the people I admire the most, like David Horowitz or Michael Savage, they started out in life as liberal, left-wing, democratic, social work type folks, but they opened their eyes with Horowitz, as much as being involved with the Black Panthers, but then realized this was something totally different. Sounds like you did the same thing at one of the most liberal universities in the United States. You're also the seventh of nine children. That must have taught you to speak up if you wanted to be heard, huh?
Yeah, basically. And I was kind of the smart aleck of the group. Constant critic and pain in the butt, really. But also it taught me to push back against authority and official narratives, because, you know, when you have a family of that size, 9 siblings, there's kind of an ideology that prevails that is dominant, and you really you either succumb to it or else you challenge it. And I happened to be a challenger of it then. But it turned out to be right. Actually, it was, I was raised very well by, German Catholic, my German Catholic parents. And, so it's something that I'm very grateful for today.
Oh, that's great. The seeds were definitely there, and you probably had to fight for the last biscuit type of thing. 11 books under your belt, a lot to say. I like that title, Springtime for Snowflakes, Social Justice and Its Postmodern Parentage, published in 2018. The Mel Brooks producer's movie, where the flop play is called Springtime for Hitler. Are you working on another book?
Well, I just finished one. In fact, it's released today.
Oh, congratulations.
The Great Reset and the Struggle for Liberty just came out today, January 10th, 2023. So that's now available on Amazon and so forth. So I haven't started another one yet, but I have some ideas in mind what I'll do next.
Great. Yeah, you know, you just had a baby. You got to wait a little while to, to decompress. But everybody run out and buy that, because you'll be blown away, I'm sure. So let's start with the big picture and work our way down to mankind. You've said, I'll quote you, I like when people quote me back, there is no climate emergency. The emergency is that elites have declared war on us using this and any number of other false pretenses. Who hurt Greta, and why is she so wrong?
Well, I mean, you know, the climate change catastrophism, as I call it, is really a pretext for total control. It has no scientific validity. I've investigated it pretty thoroughly, and it's been thoroughly debunked by real experts. It has no scientific veracity whatsoever. It's a PR campaign that was pushed and is being pushed to certain ends, and those ends are really a dictatorship. They want to control our behavior in every possible way. This is the what I call the subversive elites that are behind this agenda. They want to control everything about our lives, including like what we eat, whether we drive, how much carbon we consume in terms of fossil fuels, basically everything. And you know, the COVID crisis was kind of a preview of the kind of, control that they have in mind for us. And so I've gone into that in great detail. And in terms of the climate catastrophism. And I think there's the science is very, very flimsy at best, if not utterly fraudulent. And, climate catastrophism is, see, the left uses any kind of catastrophism they can to bring about the kind of society they're trying to impose. This is just the way leftism works. Leftism needs catastrophism. It needs catastrophes on the horizon so that it can intervene and shackle us, in effect. They are statists through and through. They want to use the state for total control. And this is why they thrive on catastrophes, looming catastrophes, which many of which there's a whole line of them that have been debunked, that have been proven to be bunk over time. I mean, in the early 20th century, the line was that, you know, we were going to be overrun with horse manure because horses in urban centers were defecating so much that we would be up to our necks in horse manure. So I mean, they've always used these various catastrophisms to try to create the kind of regime that they want to impose.
Yeah, everything from Al Gore's Earth in the Balance to Rahm Emanuel's Never Let a Crisis Go to Waste, of course, and then we have Global warming had to become climate change because we see the floods in LA have nothing to do with how warm it is. And so therefore, it's just a matter of the weather and Mother Nature being our biggest downfall. So I guess Greta was just hurt by the left and the indoctrination that they were lying to her about. My favorite one is, of course, all the sensors that are supposed to record the global warming were placed underneath air conditioning units. So it was jack up the hockey stick, which was a mathematical uncertainty as well. So last year, you said woke capitalism is what happens when socialist social democracy grows to such proportions as to make profiting nearly impossible without political approval. Absolutely right. We've seen it. Disney and the theater business is down 50%, which is huge. Parents can't trust Disney anymore because people don't want to see the woke stories or be lectured to about dark, negative social issues. That's what college is for. If the profit motive isn't working, why are General Motors, Disney, Nordstrom, so many billion-dollar companies killing themselves?
Yeah, I mean, in the long run, you know, it'll be go woke and go broke. But in the short run, it's go woke or go broke. Because what this is a cartel scheme. This is a cartel that you have to be a member of in order to profit, in order to be accepted and to gain profitability and to gain acceptance of the state. Many of these companies are relying on state largesse. And, you know, so basically it's wokeness is like a demarcation device. Either you go woke or you're banished. It's the same in public life for individuals. Go woke or you're crushed. You'll be canceled. So they're doing the same thing with corporations. So it's a big cartel scheme, a monopoly scheme to drive the non-compliant out of business and to leave only the compliant with any chance of profiting. And so, you know, this is being run from the very top down. This starts all the way from the major asset managers like BlackRock, Inc. and Larry Fink and State Street and the Vanguard Group. All of these companies are driving capital away from the non-compliant, the non-woke corporations in hopes to drive them out of business and leave only the woke in a kind of cartel shared monopoly scheme.
Yeah, and that's why my business is the anti-ESG, but that's another story. In the meantime, the billionaire Samford Health and Vanderbilt and Pritzker family with the wealthiest transgender individual in the family, Colonel Jennifer Pritzker, and her governor of Illinois brother are funding all this transgender health care or what they call gender affirming care because it sounds pleasant but is evil to minors. Mm-hmm. What is their end game, especially in the universities?
Well, I think there's a couple things involved here. First of all, they want to get rid of standard, traditional gender identity. And the reason for that is to dismantle the family. Mm. The family is the major impediment to total state control over society. The family is an autonomous, semi-autonomous organization that thrives by virtue of self-help amongst the members. And it's a way of people to cooperate and to thrive without having the state to support them. So one of the real objectives there of transgenderism, if you get rid of man and woman, then you've gotten rid of husband and wife. And when you get rid of husband and wife, you get rid of husband, wife, and children. You're a long way away towards dismantling the family. And Marxists have had the abolition of the family as one of their main objectives all the way since the Communist Manifesto in 1844, when Marx and Engels wrote that they wanted to abolish the family. And that's one thing. And another thing is, I think it's part of a neo-Malthusian depopulation plot. They really want to diminish the population of the planet. And if you get enough people self-mutilating and destroying their reproductive capabilities or confusing them to the point that they no longer reproduce, then you drive down the population growth. So these are two of the major reasons I think transgenderism is thriving and why it's being pushed by the elite.
And one thing that you missed is, the family is also where religion usually flourishes.
Yes, that's right.
God said, go forth and flourish and reproduce. And without family, you can't do that. So yes, if the goal is depopulation, which we've played plenty of quotes from Klaus Schwab and his minions saying that they want about 500 million people on the planet, that's part of it. So some more fascinating things that I found that you had said, academic freedom. And since you come out of the university system and that's where you were, had your great awakening. And if you want to tell the story on how that happened, great. But you said academic freedom, it's great as long as you don't use it. The universities are holding these institutions that are kids paying and their parents are hostages, basically vaccine mandates, masks, woke math and STEM classes, kicking off ROTC and biblical studies. Even Notre Dame gave Obama an honorary doctorate. And he was the senator most in favor of abortion and the seeds of the laws that led to this transgender and transhumanism, I call it. The NIH funds to the tune of billions, all these schools. You can Google NIH plus any school and just follow the money. It's all there. Mm-hmm. Historically, revolutions come out of universities like Iran and the Jacobins in French Revolution. Mm-hmm. Is this the New World Order's way of neutralizing the kids?
Oh, absolutely. This is 100%. The universities are, 100% indoctrination camps. These are means by which they reproduce the kind of subjects that they want. And these subjects will be woke and, basically following the state narratives on everything from COVID to climate change to you name it, transgenderism and so on down the line. I'm not sure. I've sort of missed the question a little bit, though. If you could rephrase the question, I missed something.
Well, we were talking about the powers that be, and I was wondering if they were using the universities as their way of changing what used to be the incubators of revolution, like mm-hmm. the Jacobins and French that led to the French Revolution, to keep them neutered so they don't do that and overthrow the World Economic Forum.
I think it's more like this. These are the minions of the subversive elites who are revolutionaries. And so they are reproducing their revolution through the university system. And this subversion began all the way back in the early 20th century. And it started as early as nonprofit foundations began to influence education, and they were infiltrated by communists from the 1920s on. And then you had the Frankfurt School of Critical Theory that came over from Germany in 1933 and set up shop and began subverting the university system. And they modeled themselves on the notion of what the Italian Marxist Antonio Gramsci called cultural hegemony. They wanted to establish socialist hegemony or dominance in the institutions first before they could overthrow the capitalist order. So this is all part and parcel of a subversive elite who have infiltrated and taken over these institutions. They've done this long march through the institutions, which was a phrase flouted by, or floated, I should say, by Rudi Dutschke, a German socialist student activist in the 60s. All of this has been done by design. These are the revolutionaries, and these subversive elites have attained their goal of cultural hegemony in the institutions. The long march through the institutions has been thoroughly completed.
That's very well said. And it's weird because Harvard was busted in the 40s for anti-Semitism, and now they're before the Supreme Court again for discriminating mm-hmm. against Asians and maybe one yeah. day whites and hopefully conservatives. Why don't they just open to all and all ideas where the money is? Because you described an overthrow of, say, a theocracy in Iran or a king in England or France. America is different. It's a republic. It's right. It has democratic institutions in it. That's a good thing.
Right.
Why wouldn't a Harvard be the alternative to what you're describing as opposed to playing along with it? Is it just money?
It's not exactly money. They have a certain order in mind, and that order is to have a controlling elite that are basically on top with the state. It's kind of a ruling oligarchy with the state on top, and they want socialism for everybody else on the bottom. I call it corporate socialism or economic fascism. What they're trying to establish is a kind of two-tiered system where you have the oligarchs and their elite servants and the state on top and everybody else basically living in socialism. That's really what they're after. They've been after this for almost 100 years, maybe more.
So more like a college administrator versus the students, this type of thing for the rest of us, because a lot of us does spill out of the universities into the population. But we'll talk
Absolutely.
About that. Yeah, we'll talk about that more in a second. The amount of money spent on diversity, inclusion, and equity, or DEI, or as I call it, DIE, administrators, it's off the charts. I look at places like Ohio State and I see 50 plus all at six-figure salaries that would fund a lot of kids. Do you think the trend might reverse soon, or are we going to see more of this?
Oh, they're going to double and triple down. As this gets criticized and exposed for the sham that it is, they're going to double and triple down on their efforts to enforce this DIE, which is really a war against the majority. It has to do, so they use these minorities, so-called, or these subordinated or subaltern peoples, whatever the new phrase they use for them, as weapons against the majority. That's really what they're for. So diversity, equity, inclusion, or diversity, inclusion, and equity, or DIE, as I like to call it too, is really and the woke ideology in general is mostly just a weaponization of certain groups against the dominant majority in order to demoralize and destroy them.
Unbelievable. And this just in, while you were talking in my inbox right now, Minnesota will soon make teachers endorse child mutilation to get a license. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, they'll have to endorse transgenderism in order to practice. This is not really a surprise. I knew this was coming, where if you were a therapist, first of all, you can't practice as a therapist if you don't go along with the transgender transitioning. If you suggest that, you know, this psychological condition, dysphoria, gender dysphoria, or whatever you want to call it, is psychological. If you say that it's a psychological condition that can be treated outside of the transitioning process, then you're already in deep trouble. You'll probably lose your license. I know this for a fact because my daughter has just become a psychotherapist, and I'm very concerned for her, although I think she's unfortunately bought into a lot of this.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's not long ago, and I'm old enough to remember because I was in Washington State at the time, Microsoft was complaining about the quality of graduates coming out of college compared to India and China. This doesn't seem like the antidote to fix that. You know, 1 in 3 kids in Tennessee can't read at college level or at grade level, and they want to hold back third graders because of lost learning during COVID. If the youth are the future, are they banking on illegal immigrants to replace citizens failed by their public schools?
I mean, this is a very interesting question. And, you know, if I go down this road, I'd be accused of endorsing, you know, replacement theory. But it's hard not to see it. Basically, what they're trying to do is to get rid of this dominant majority and their power base by basically de-educating them, making them basically useless, and then replacing them with immigrants, etc. Because these people will be more beholden to the state. They'll be more willing to subscribe to the state dictates because they have been recipients of the state's largesse, which is coming out of our pockets, by the way. So They're robbing us to pay these people to be loyalists to the regime while they disenfranchise and basically demoralize us. That's what's going on.
And we get to pay for it, like you said. Tomorrow, I'm doing a show with another professor, Larry Sand, from the other coast, president of the California Teachers Empowerment Network, and we'll discuss Randy Weingarten for sure. She's the queen wokester, in my opinion, in the woke system. Have you any thoughts on her reign of terror?
Not too much. I try not to pay much attention to them in the individual sense. Although I do in the book treat, you know, what I think are the grand inquisitors of wokeness. yeah, she'd be on the list, but there's, I think, other offenders that are significantly as important, like Chrystia Freeland in Canada and people that are doing things to us through the state. But I haven't paid that much attention to Randy Weingarten, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I found it ironic, sarcastically, if not coincidental, that right after Elizabeth Warren, senator from Massachusetts, dragged Mark Zuckerberg in testimony and accused him of harboring hate speech, the FBI moved into the C-suite and started shadow banning and censoring. She seems like the senator from academia, even with her phony Indian heritage. Is she responsible for the current state of things, too? Is she on your list? And I'm sure the large endowments like the teachers union dues that elect a lot of pro-school Democrats are a factor as well.
Yeah, I mean the student the unions the school unions, the faculty unions are totally on board with all of this, and they certainly are. And Weingarten would be totally on board with all the censorship and propaganda that's being perpetrated through social media and their so-called their treatment of so-called hate speech and all that. So, you know, once again, this is a way to shut down the majority, to make sure that their views can't be heard, and to basically shove down our throats this elite agenda.
And she was a big proponent of lockdowns and remote learning, and 2 million was the last number I saw, public school kids didn't go back. So if that is, if that's what I was going to ask you, is that a sign of improvement, progress? Can we put a Band-Aid on this problem you're talking about, or nope, it's rotten to the core and it may just
I think
be
it's
temporary.
Rotten to the core. If I had children of school age today, I would have them out of the public school system immediately. They would, you know, this is a place where the state reproduces their minions, and they're basically creating idiot boxes of repetition and state they're creating in these public schools, they're reproducing the kind of subjects that they want, and those subjects are compliant. They're touting the woke agenda, they're touting the COVID agenda, they're touting the climate change agenda. They want to, they're taking these people in and just creating basically useless but somewhat useful idiots, as if you were.
Yeah.
The Soviet Union, Stalin referred to the believers in communism, the true believers in the Soviet Union. This is basically what the public school system is about, and I would have nothing whatsoever to do with it. If I had school-age children, they would be out of there. They would have been out of there long ago. I think it's a great thing that you see more people doing homeschooling. It's the real promise for our future. If people are homeschooled and allowed to actually think and learn rather than be indoctrinated into all this garbage where they don't learn anything of vital importance to keep society running, they don't learn science, math, engineering, nothing. They learn this nonsense, this woke ideology, and it destroys their prospects financially and otherwise, and it makes them incapable of opposing this regime. So I would stay away from the public school system entirely. I see the defection from the public school system as a very big bonus that came out of the COVID crisis. Yeah,
I hear that. 65% of Americans polled by Rasmussen say we are on the wrong track. So when will they put it together that voting for Dems over and over again is the definition of insanity?
Well, I mean, I think that 65% is probably right, and it may be even higher given that the polling is always tilted to the left. But the unfortunate thing is this majority's voice is not being heard. This majority is being shut out of the conversation. They don't have a choice. You know, leaving aside electoral malfeasance and other things, which I think definitely prevail. If you look around the world, you'll see that these globalist elites will not let populists or people that are interested in national sovereignty and individual rights, they won't let them into office anywhere. In Brazil, in the United States, across Europe, Italy got lucky, I think, hopefully got a little bit of stroke of luck to be able to elect somebody that they actually wanted. But we don't get to elect who we want. So I'm not sure that it's at the fault of the people not knowing. I think that we're being shut out of the political process.
Yeah, you're right. Tennessee wants to open 100 Hillsdale charter schools. You're with Hillsdale, but the unions and school boards here in Williamson County have pushed back on that, even though Governor Lee has signed off on it. Do you think charter schools like those are the answer to failing public schools?
Well, being a fellow at Hillsdale, I should say yes, but actually I'm not really in favor of charter schools, because what it does is it allows the state to get involved in education, independent education, whereas I think homeschooling is the real answer, because it keeps the state out of it. Charter schools are chartered by the state, and therefore they are beholden to and answerable to the state. So it's not the best solution. It's better than the public school system. And when Hillsdale's involved, it's far better than the public school system, but it's not the ultimate answer, frankly.
I see. Unplugging completely from the federal funds, from the state, yes, is the answer, I see. And yeah, unfortunately, absolutely, most parents working two jobs or stay at home,
it's very difficult.
It's very difficult. It would be a great solution, but it is difficult. I like pods. You said, close your eyes and imagine a world full of self-replicating little Stalins. Now open your eyes. You live in that world. It's called social justice, and the little Stalins are SJWs. SJW equals Stalin, just weirder.
Yeah, that's kind of one of my favorites, actually. Thanks for pulling that out. I think it speaks for itself. I don't know what else to say about that. Did you have any thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think it's exactly right. I don't necessarily see them everywhere, not the grocery store or the gas pump, but I'm sure on the campuses. Were you referring to the campuses, or were you talking about America or the whole wide world? Are we just in Stalin view?
The campuses, Twitter, you know, on Twitter, some of them are actually bots, but most of them behave like bots, whether they're actually controlled by human beings or not. They may as well be programmed technology, in effect. They are complete, you know, basically these people are just, they're just reproduced bots. I mean, they just have this certain narrative down. They're given the language to use. It's plug and play rhetoric that they use. You know, they use all these terms. They throw them around in academia and on social media. You know, they're self-replicating, because, you know, one other thing I've said once is the left eats its own, just not fast enough, because they're reproducing leftists faster than they can destroy themselves, unfortunately.
Yeah. Although with transgenderism, pro-abortion, the LGBTQIA, whatever comes next, maybe they'll go extinct relatively soon, or at least in our lifetimes. But switching gears a little bit, you know, the FBI took a knee. I have the pictures for BLM and Antifa while they were burning federal buildings in Portland and caused billions of damage across the country. And a few alleged trespassers and paraders, misdemeanors, are in jail going on year three now for January 6th.
Yeah.
Are we a free people if that is happening? You know, Nancy Pelosi was responsible for security that day and declined National Guard ahead of time. What is her legacy for the kids? She always says that, for the kids, for the kids.
For the kids. Listen, I mean, this shows you that we have basically the beginnings of a gulag system in the United States. The fact that these January 6th protesters are languishing in prison, sometimes in solitary confinement under the most egregious conditions imaginable, Whereas real criminals go unmolested, people like Biden's son and I mean, the slew of them that you could name that have committed actual crimes go completely scot-free. This proves to me that the justice system is utterly and totally political. It's not a two-tiered system. It is not a justice system at all. It's not two-tiered. It's non-just. It's an injustice system. And this is what happens under totalitarian regimes. And we're living under a uniparty, Democrat-controlled, deep state totalitarianism. That's basically what we're dealing with. And that's why we see this kind of outrageous differential treatment of people like the January 6th protesters as against the real criminals, like those who burned down buildings and caused $2 billion worth of damages and killed 37 people. Recently, we found out that the officer who shot Ashley Babbitt was not put in jail, but in a state-supported suite replete with pet care, costing some $800, I think, a day. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
I think they just awarded a bunch of medals for that day, too, for something just, that they didn't deserve.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah, I think the history books, you tell me if I'm wrong, but it's going to be the age of Pelosi. It's going to look like, you know, a really bad era that we may never recover from. I don't know. I left the largest Jewish congregation west of the Mississippi, really outside New England, because the chief rabbi said gender is a social construct. First time I'd ever heard that. I said, what part of Genesis 2:18 don't you understand, lady? You know, probably misgendered her. Exactly. For those that don't know, then the Lord said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him. But anyway, you said gender is not a social construct. The social construction is the idea that gender is a social construction. How did the devil trick the biblical scholars into this nonsense?
It is amazing how woke ideology and all this has penetrated the churches. And I think they did it by duping people into believing that, you know, Christianity or you know, Judeo-Christian values are about, you know, taking care of the weak and the poor. And that's all true. But the thing is that they are not founded on this group basis. You know, like, for example, in Christianity, it is not true that you're guilty by virtue of being a member of a group, nor are you redeemed by virtue of being a member of a group. This is a personal relationship with your creator, and in Christianity, your savior. This has nothing to do with groups, and there's no group redemption, and there's no group condemnation. So they got duped into this. So what they do is they use kind of like parts of the precepts that people believe in, then they pervert them just ever so slightly so that people buy into these perversions of these belief systems, and then they totally infiltrate. And this is happening, you know, throughout the many churches in the United States. I happen to be a member of an evangelical church who has not succumbed to this. And we don't subscribe to social justice gospel, which is total nonsense.
Called doctrines of demons.
Yeah, I mean, so if there's social justice, then there's no justice. So it makes no sense either.
Yes.
And then, of course, we had at least a lot of historians have, and I agree with them, think that Reagan, Thatcher, and Pope John were the three that brought down communism temporarily. And what we have ever since has been the communist infiltration of the institutions, including religion. So that would make sense. Mm-hmm. You agree with that?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. I think, you know, if anything, the Cold War was, you know, the winning of the Cold War was actually was a kind of a Pyrrhic victory. We won the battle, but we did not win the war. And so the war went on unbeknownst to us. It kind of lulled people to sleep, thinking, well, that particular plague or that particular demon is vanquished. But it wasn't. It was sleeping, and it was in sleeper cells, if you will, yeah. Which would then infiltrate the rest of society. So
You know,
we
that
kind of.
reminds me actually, because Willie Brown from California, Dianne Feinstein from California, Nancy Pelosi, they were all involved in the Jim Jones Guyana cult. That went away, but they stuck around and got into the halls of power. And though there's probably a very interesting nexus there of cultism to get us here as well. I don't know if that's anything you've ever looked at.
That's something I would love to look into. I hadn't heard that before. I'll have to investigate that. Thank you for that lead.
Yeah, and Harvey Milk in San Francisco as well. Anyway, so history definitely rhymes, as Mark Twain supposedly said. Mm-hmm. You said the socialist communist foot soldiers neither recognize the socialist communist revolution when it comes, nor descry its totalitarian character, for they are willing victims who end up clamoring for totalitarianism. Churchill said, an appeaser is one who feeds a crocodile hoping it will eat him last. Is the Democratic Party and the Republicans that enable them setting us up for totalitarianism?
Absolutely. They have been setting us up for totalitarianism. And the not the whole Republican Party, but a great contingent of them has been basically going along for the ride, afraid to rock the boat, afraid to draw the criticism and ire of this totalitarian left. And so they have sold us down the river, but we can still fight back. I want to say this. I want to leave on a note of hope. There's a great contingent of Americans who are very recalcitrant, and they will not succumb easily. We will fight back, and we will restore our republic. We will win.
That's great. We got about 4 or 5 minutes left with you. Did you want to say anything about your NYU experience? I didn't want to read the entire article here or op-ed that you wrote, but I do know you have strong opinions about how they're wrong, you were right, and I agree they never should have pushed you out the door.
Well, I mean, what I saw coming, you know, so what I saw was I criticized some things about the social justice creed, like the deplatforming of speakers, the establishment of a bias reporting hotline, all these Stasi state type elements. And I saw totalitarianism on the move, and I saw it on the rise, and I saw it encroaching, and I saw the future, that I saw the future coming before my eyes. And it turned out I was right. So what I want to say about it is, you know, it's not simply that I was right. That's unfortunately I was right, because I don't want this totalitarian regime. But it happens to be that I was right. They are a dangerous mob, and they drove me out of the university, basically ruined my academic career in that stage of it. Anyway, I think it's been resuscitated thanks to Hillsdale and my own work, frankly, and the grace of God. But yeah, I mean, it was first of all, I was a leftist when all this started, and so what they did is actually wake me up. They, as I put it, basically, they tore the scales of their ideology from my eyes. They traumatized me into seeing the truth, and I want to thank them for that.
Well, Professor, I want to thank you for your time. We appreciate you. We are at the end here. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you.
Yes, I mean, everything you need to know about me, other than, you know, things you don't need to know, are on my website at michaelrechtenwald.com. MichaelRechtenwald.com. You can get all my essays for free. The only thing I charge for are books, and I sell them directly from my website, although you can get them on Amazon as well. I'm not self-published, but I send out signed copies. MichaelRechtenwald.com.
Excellent. And your book is out today.
Out today.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. I don't
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, what did you think of our guest, Professor Mike Rechtenwald?
Well, having written my own book, Breaking the Deception Code, I think you know what I'm going to say. That guy knows his stuff, and he's got 11 books underneath his belt. I've got one, but he knows his stuff, and between the two of you, I'm like, I can't come in. This is not my show. But I was like thumbs up the whole time. My head was going, yes, yes, because he fully grasps the scenario that we are in. And as I said off air between the three of us, I said the good news is this, and I really do believe it. And he said this. He mentioned this too. He believes there's a strong contingency of hardcore constitutionalist, God-fearing, country-loving people that are going to turn this thing around. And I do believe it too. You're part of it. I'm part of it. The flame that I'm involved with is part of it. And others are part of it. Epic Times and others and all these independent platforms that are rising up to take and replace YouTube, like Rumble. We're on Rumble, Steve. And that didn't exist a couple years ago.
And no, I think we're part of the Great Awakening, and we're trying to help as many people wake up as possible and be really woke, not the woke of the social justice, but woke. And he is a victim of cancel culture. And so to be able to rebound, come back out, guns a-blazing, not shy away and hide in a cave somewhere, can only help the cause. Yep. Moving on, we just had a very, very interesting post-holiday, post-college football championships fight for the leadership of the Republican-controlled Congress. And so I just wanted to chat about that real quick. Let's kind of put it in perspective with clip number one.
I believe that no member of Congress, by House rule, should be allowed to accept a donation for their campaign from a federal lobbyist or a federal political action committee. That money all has strings attached to it, and anybody who tries to tell you otherwise is lying. And when members take hundreds of thousands of dollars from lobbyists and PACs, they work for them more than they work for their constituents. And guess what? I intend to offer that amendment on the House floor in January, and I already have Democrats ready to vote for it, maybe even all of them. The second thing I would suggest is that if someone is a member of Congress, they should be prohibited from lobbying for life. Why is it so hard to say that you should choose one side or the other to be on? You're either in the law-making game or you're in the influence-peddling game. And those who choose to be in the influence-peddling game, go ahead, but you should sacrifice that when you get the privilege to represent 750,000 people. I intend to offer that amendment on January 3rd, and I expect that there will be Democrats voting for it. I will also introduce an amendment to have a ban on members of Congress trading individual stocks. How can we say that that is not something that dilutes our trust in markets and in governance when people are essentially able to bet on the outcomes that they have an ability to somewhat control? And I expect Democrats to vote for that. And finally, I would observe something that has really worked well in the state of Florida, a single subject rule. A bill coming to the floor should only deal with one subject. I was incensed as a freshman when I had to vote on the farm bill and whether or not to authorize war in Yemen in the same vote. And we could still have broad bills that relate to insurance or education or appropriations, but the notion that we lash all these things together does not serve our constituents and the American people. And I would expect, if we're in the majority, Democrats will vote for my amendment for a single subject rule.
Wow. Oh, man. That guy's, but he's talking my language, Steve.
That's right. Our language. That is Matt Gaetz, of congressman from Florida. So I'm sure we'll get to know that voice. But times, they are a changing, I think. We will see. Like I said, we just had a new speaker put in place. It was a contentious fight, 15 rounds. Haven't seen that for 100 years. Now they're putting the committees together. But some of the things that he mentioned directly related to the past policies of the reign of Pelosi. Pelosi is one of the richest members of Congress, no longer Speaker, with an estimated net worth of more than $106 million, according to an analysis by the New York Post. Nancy Pelosi is scrambling to quash bipartisan efforts to ban stock trading by congressional lawmakers, even as she and her husband have raked in as much as $30 million from bets on the big tech firms Pelosi is responsible for regulating. Late last month, the former House Speaker disclosed that the Pelosis scooped up millions in bullish call options for stocks including Google, Salesforce, Micron Technologies, and Roblox. At the same
All the same, some insiders say she has slow-walked efforts to rein in big tech. I'm guessing some of those actually didn't pay off very well, Nancy. But with a new rule pass, that is over and things can be different. Let's play clip number two.
What is wrong with demanding for an easy, safe kind of their income, a path to a safe place for them to win, or excuse me, to work?
So there you go. That's the 17th Amendment in action, which is why I hate it. The Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state, elected by the people thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall not have one vote, shall have one vote. The electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislatures. Good luck, Pennsylvania, with that for 6 years. I'd like to see them repeal the amendment stat. That, by the way, was John Fetterman, newly elected senator, just sworn in from Pennsylvania. Back to the House. Let's start off with clip number three.
We'll always put American values over autocracy, benevolence over bigotry, the Constitution over the cult, democracy over demagogues, economic opportunity over extremism, freedom over fascism, governing over gaslighting, hopefulness over hatred, inclusion over isolation, justice over judicial overreach, knowledge over kangaroo courts, liberty over limitation, maturity over Mar-a-Lago, normalcy over negativity, opportunity over obstruction, people over politics, quality of life issues over QAnon, reason over racism, substance over slander, triumph over tyranny, understanding over ugliness, voting rights over voter suppression, working families over the well-connected, xenial over xenophobia, yes we can over you can't do it, and zealous representation over zero-sum confrontation.
Talk about gaslighting, Steve.
That, my friends, is the new House Minority Leader, the new Nancy Pelosi, Hakeem Jeffries, election denier, by the way.
Is that hawking? Is he hawking a false narrative? He's hawking a false narrative.
That's right. So A to Z. When I ran for student class president in my senior year of high school, my speech was a little better than that, but at least he proved that he does know his alphabet, or at least the intern who wrote that does. But did you catch it? Gaslighting. Dictionary.com, number one word of the year for 2022. I did a show on it. That's what Dems do all the time, but he tried to juxtapose it with governing, but it's the Dems that do that with inflation, border, and hijack the language of science with safe and effective. He flipped everything that they do and put it on the other side.
That's right.
You heard that, right?
Oh, 100%.
Let's go over the big three. Or not the big three, but the biggies that he mentioned. Bigotry, for B. Hatred, inclusion, racism, of course. Slander, ugliness. Let's play clip number four and hear who this guy really is.
Steve, Mr. Paoletta, you've echoed a similar sentiment. I think your quote is, many on the left hate Justice Thomas because he is a black conservative who has never bowed to those who demand that he must think a certain way because of the color of his skin. What evidence do you have to support that incendiary charge?
When Chairman Benny Thompson calls him an Uncle Tom because of his views on voter ID and affirmative action, when in fact more black Americans support voter ID and with respect to affirmative action in college education, they're 62% opposed to it. So that is the most vile, disgusting thing you can say. And so, yes,
reclaiming my time.
Yes.
There are a lot of vile, disgusting things that can
Well, you just asked me for an example.
The notion that is, right, when some members on this side of the aisle and others have been called the N-word throughout different points of our life belies the point that you have a particular bias. And It's an overstatement, which is not surprising when you look at the balance of your testimony. And if Chairman Benny Thompson has an observation to make, he's entitled to free speech. You apparently believe that Jenny Thomas, regardless of how many conflicts she has, is entitled to her own political opinions as well.
Well, Steve, one thing before you come in, I just want to point out, people can't see the clips, but the fact is everybody sitting in there that wasn't speaking still have a freaking mask on, and it's 2023 today. These people are insane.
They are indeed. They are indeed. And they are no longer in power because they lost the Congress. So that's good. So let's hear about how governing might go from the new speaker, California Kev McCarthy.
I know the night is late, but when we come back, our very first bill will repeal the funding for 87,000 new hours.
And they did it. They just did it today. I just want to read this real quick from Citizens for Renewing America. After the entire political establishment, including all manner of legacy conservative pundits, said it was wrong or impossible, the 20 conservative stalwarts who temporarily blocked Kevin McCarthy from becoming speaker have now forced an agreement that, as reported, is truly transformational in how the House of Representatives should be run. It levels a body blow against the D.C. political cartel that colludes against the American people. Namely, it gives the House conservatives the procedural power through the all-important Rules Committee to control the consideration of all major bills and amendments, independence from leadership not seen in nearly 60 years. It creates a modern-day church-style committee with full authority and resources to hold the weaponized national security state accountable. It commits the House to balance the budget in 10 years with substantial cuts to woke and weaponized government and dictates the terms for the upcoming flight of the debt limit and the upcoming fight on the debt limit. And it enforces all of these commitments by allowing any one member to force a vote on removing the speaker. All of these are major priorities envisioned and championed by the Center for Renewing America. This agreement would not be possible but for the early and immediate five members who define the art of the possible by publicly declaring their opposition to Mr. McCarthy. And now this agreement must be the foundation moving forward in the House of Representatives for all future speakers. That is change. All right. They set the bar pretty high. Here's what Matt Gaetz said we got. I'm not supposed to play it as a clip. I'm going to read it to you real quick. The Republican rule package guarantees that these seven bills come up for a vote in the House. They include cutting IRS funding, restoring migration, and curtailing abortion. A bill to rescind certain balances made available to the Internal Revenue Service, a bill to authorize the Security of Homeland Security to suspend the entry of aliens and for other purposes, a bill to prohibit the Secretary of Energy from sending petroleum products from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to China, and for other purposes, a bill to amend the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act to direct district attorney and prosecutor offices to report to the Attorney General, and for other purposes, a bill to require the National Instant Criminal Background Check System to notify U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the relevant state and local law enforcement agencies whenever the information available to the system indicates that a person illegally or unlawfully in the United States may be attempting to receive a firearm, a bill to prohibit taxpayer-funded abortions, a bill to amend Title 18 United States Code to prohibit a healthcare practitioner from failing to exercise the proper degree of care in the case of a child who survives an abortion or attempted abortion. Those are some pretty serious changes that if they actually go through with would make America a better country, I personally believe. Let's see. I wanted to lastly say, where did it go? Sorry, folks. Let's play clip number six.
We're going to pass bills to fix the nation's errant challenges, from wide open southern borders to American last energy policies to woke indoctrination in our schools.
Yeah, that's what McCarthy said. So he's on board, apparently. And
I think he's being forced to.
Yeah.
That's what we want. We want pressure placed on big government individuals to maybe shrink government and get them out of our lives? Look, I'd remove Homeland Security altogether, but that's me.
We'll get there. Here's what McCarthy had to give up for the votes, according to the Epoch Times' Roger Simon, who interviewed first-year Congressman Andy Ogles from Tennessee, who has yet to even be sworn in. I spoke with Andy Ogles by phone the night of January 6, 2023, before the roll call vote, during which it was said two of the remaining rejectionists who couldn't accept McCarthy personally would absent themselves so that the magic number would be lowered and the new speaker would go over the top. Apropos, Ogles informed me that what many had guessed was true, his absence from voting in a previous round was also planned. He waited to see that all was going according to plan before stepping forward to flip his vote to McCarthy after the initial round. For Ogles, the basis of all the negotiations was to establish the rule of the game in Congress that has been altered over the years beyond recognition. And he pointed out the rules of a game almost always determine the winner. He shared with me a list of some of what has been roughly negotiated to date. The devil is always in the details. One, as has been reported, it will only take a single congressperson acting in what is known as a Jefferson motion to move to remove the speaker if he or she goes back on their word or policy agenda. Two, a church-style committee will be convened to look into the weaponization of the FBI and other government organizations, presumably the CIA, the subject of the original church committee, against the American people. Jim Jordan is going to actually chair that. Number three, term limits will be put up for a vote. Oh my gosh, can you imagine? We've been talking about that for 40 years. Number four, bills presented to Congress will be single subject, not omnibus, with all the attended earmarks, and there will be a 72-hour minimum period to read them. Matt Gaetz just said that was important, and that's happening. Number five, the Texas border plan will be put before Congress from the Hill. The four-pronged plan aims to complete physical border infrastructure, fix border enforcement policies, enforce our laws in the interior, and target cartels and criminal organizations. This is amazing. Number six, COVID mandates will be ended, as will all funding for them, including so-called emergency funding. And lastly, number seven, budget bills would stop the endless increase in the debt ceiling and hold the Senate accountable for the same.
Wow.
Steve, if all seven of those happen, what do you think?
Then we would start seeing a true revolution in the right direction. We would see a transformation of our government as we haven't seen in decades.
We shall see. Trust but verify, Ronald Reagan said about the former Soviet Union.
Right.
That applies now to the same old from the establishment
Washington.
The Mill Creek View podcast will be watching. Big finale, final clip, number seven.
Rights of individual citizens by silencing them. And that's what's been happening through Twitter, Facebook, Google, you know, Instagram. All of these big tech companies have been colluding with the federal government, the various three-letter agencies, to silence the American people. And that is unconstitutional. It violates the First Amendment because the government is initiating it here. And the government cannot do that. And that's what this bill does. It prevents it. It states very, very clearly, and it's got some teeth to it, too. If there's a federal employee that is involved in this, then they're subject to termination. So it's a great bill. I look forward to reintroducing it in the 118th. And the church committee is going to expose the extent to which big tech has been colluding with the government, and which is why it's going to make this bill even more important. But the church committee is truly going to be a tremendously powerful committee. It will have authority even over the intelligence communities, which should absolutely terrify the Biden administration and the executive branch. We are going to hold them accountable to the American people, finally, once and for all.
Wow. Wow. I really want to see these things go through, Steve.
We'll be watching. Stay tuned for my Thought of the Week. Welcome to my Thought of the Week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to Rumble or Spotify and hit the subscribe buttons and follow us. And thank you for doing it. Socialism is precisely the religion that must overwhelm Christianity. In the new order, socialism will triumph, but first capturing the culture via infiltration of schools, universities, churches, and the media by transforming the consciousness of society.
Antonio Gramsci, 1915, an Italian Marxist philosopher, journalist, linguist, writer, and politician. He wrote on philosophy, political theory, sociology, history, and linguistics. He was a founding member and one-time leader of the Italian Communist Party. If by a liberal, they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights, their civil liberties, if that is what they mean by a liberal, then I am proud to be a liberal. John F. Kennedy. Last one, the goal of the liberals as it emerges from the record of the past decades was the struggle this country was to smuggle this country into welfare statism by means of single, concrete, specific measures, enlarging the power of the government a step at a time, never permitting these steps to be summed up into principles, never permitting their direction to be identified or the basic issue to be named. Thus, statism was to come not by vote or by violence, but by slow rot. And Rand, she condemned the initiation of force as immoral and opposed collectivism, statism, and anarchism. Instead, she supported laissez-faire capitalism, which she defined as the system based on recognizing individual rights, including private property rights. She was sharply critical of most philosophers and philosophical traditions known to her, except for Aristotle, Thomas Aquinas, and classical liberals. Rand's books have sold over 37 million copies. Wow. Check them out. Well, that is it for another episode. I really hope you liked it. Be sure to check in tomorrow. We have another great, interesting guest for you. And as always, until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper. Peace in our time.
County Fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like rolling thunder.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.